Welcome to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to this, the latest Facebook Burr News Live interview, joined by the Finance Minister, Bob Richards. Minister, we're here obviously to talk about the budget. Just first of all, in very general terms, what were you trying to achieve with the budget?
This budget is the second installment of a three-year plan that we announced last year. We actually wanted to implement it the year before last, but that didn't work out. It's the second installment, probably the most important installment, where we have to make some significant changes to the tax system to reach the goal of having the government balance the budget and not have to incur any more debt.
But was that what you were trying to achieve, balance the budget?
That is the ultimate objective.
That's the overarching objective as far as you're concerned.
Yes.
What kind of reaction have you had to the budget? Not what you've read, I want to know personally.
I think people, some people get it, some people don't. People tend to look at everything through their own lens.
It's natural, of course.
Which is natural. I think that this budget creates more burden for particularly larger business.
It does create more.
Yeah, it does. No question about that. And it also removes some of the concessions we call concessions. They're really subsidies that we have had in place for various sectors since the start of my administration. But before my administration in finance, it was there from the previous government to help certain sectors ride out the recession, and certainly announced that I think 2 years ago that we'd be systematically removing those subsidies, so that these companies had to be on their own.
It's interesting that you admit that it's a larger burden on the larger businesses. Isn't that a bit of a risky strategy? I mean, I want to come into that a bit later on in more detail, but now you've mentioned it.
There is no way to do this without risk. I sort of said this in the House of Assembly and to our friends at the Chamber of Commerce the other day. It's like somebody who overindulges heavily the night before, and the morning after you have to undergo what you might call a period of adjustment. And we're still in that period of adjustment. And so, as we know, the period of adjustment, otherwise known as a hangover, is unpleasant. But you have to go through that to get back to sobriety. And so that's what we have to do.
I'll come back to that.
Cause it can't be done painlessly.
I'll come back to it because I know both the Chamber and KPMG made some comment about the cost of doing business. So yeah. I want to come back to that. Of course, your opposite number, the Leader of Opposition, David Burt, gave his reply to the budget. What were your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on it were he was like a doctor who was prescribing another round of drinks to cure a hangover.
Can you be a bit more specific? Because, I mean, I read it. There were stuff in there about job creation and things like that.
I counted 22 occasions where I scribbled down, and I came to it, with what? Where he said he was going to spend, invest, otherwise fund this, that, and the other. There were at least 22 occasions where he said he was going to do that, and there was no mention of how he's going to pay for it. Also, there was no mention of public debt at all in his response, and he didn't even refer to balancing the budget until page 24 of the 28-page speech. And in that context, he used it to say that something else he was talking about was more important than balancing the budget. So, in my view, the opposition still don't consider the solvency of the government, the debt of the government, the ability to be sustainable. They don't consider that to be important. It's the lack of appreciation for responsible and prudent governing that got us into this situation, and they still don't admit that this is a priority.
I'm sure there'll be a response to that, but obviously debt, you mentioned that there, debt is the biggest single item now on the budget list, isn't it? It's a ministry of debt, some 180 so million. Can you explain, though, that I'm kind of intrigued that when the OBA came into power, won the election in 2012, the debt was around about 1.2, 1.3 billion. It's now almost 2.5 billion, and I noticed the Chamber's predicting it's going to be in the region of 2.8 billion at the end of this, the end of 2018 financial year. How is it managed?
They're wrong there. Anyway.
Well, that's why I meant it was a Chamber, but regardless, it is around 2.5 billion now. The charts in the budget show that. How has the debt managed to go up by over a billion, or around about $1 billion, in the time, in the 4 years, almost 5 years that you've been in power?
Well, the first budget that we brought was basically the remnants of the PLP budget, because I presented a budget in February. The election was in December. So we really couldn't do much in the space of a month. The deficit on that year was $331 million, just for that year.
I remember you saying,
And so we have been systematically reducing the budget deficits to a point where those deficits will eventually come to zero. For those folks who are watching, they should refer to chart 15 in my budget statement, where it shows the year-over-year increases in the debt. And you'll see that from the time that we took over, the bars have been going down, 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 and down. Steadily down. They will get to zero, because basically you have to do a glide path to get that deficit down to zero. You just can't cut it off one time. If I did that, I have to fire half the civil service.
That's something else I want to touch on as well, of course.
So this is a planned glide path to restore the government to prudent operations. And you can't do it overnight. I've had this accusation hurled at me up on the Hill that the debt has doubled on the OBA. Well, on the PLP, it went up over 700%. So, let's not get silly here. What are our operations doing to the debt? And our operations have been cutting the deficit, which caused it. Remember, the debt is just the accumulation of deficits.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, our operations have cut the deficit every year since we've been in power. And with this budget and the next one, we will cut that deficit to zero.
Okay, so when can we actually expect to really make inroads into repayments of the debt?
Well, once we have the operations in a position where we don't operate at a deficit, the debt automatically starts getting paid off, because we have this thing called a sinking fund,
okay.
Right? Which requires us by law to put aside 2.5% of the debt for repayment.
Yeah.
So the sinking fund, even without any other sort of specific thing to pay down the debt, the sinking fund will go into operation to reduce the debt. But what we've had for quite a long time, we've actually had to borrow money to put into the sinking fund, which is the most stupid thing you can hear, stupid thing you've ever heard of. So once we stop running deficits, then the sinking fund will start to roll off the debt. We can have, sure, we'd like to have some ideas to reduce it more quickly. And that's something we can think of in the future. But right now, we have a mechanism which pays the debt off in an orderly fashion. But we have to stop borrowing for operations.
the debt, obviously, paying off the debt, has an impact on your ability to spend on social issues. I wanted to go into that because people have to excuse me, but I have to put this into context and read some of the stuff from the budget.
It's great stuff. I wrote it.
I hope I can do it justice. There are still many seniors that are struggling to make ends meet, and with the high cost of healthcare, find themselves in financial straits. It is an unfortunate fact that a large percentage of Bermudians on government financial assistance are seniors. You went on to say, and I take this out of context, but I think as a whole it's okay, healthcare, public education, social safety net and national security are four critical functions that government performs. They are crucial to maintaining a social fabric of our community. And then you went on to say that the recession has not ended for everybody, that hardship continues for many. But then you cut health by $23 million, you cut child and family services by 2%, and you cut financial assistance by just over $1 million. How can you say these are critical functions of government and then cut the budgets?
Well, they are critical functions of government.
But you've cut the budgets.
But we can cut their budgets without cutting the service. Right? We can cut the budgets without cutting the service. I can tell
you. How do you do that?
I can tell you that on this desk, this table that we're sitting at right now, there are cabinet memos from various civil servants to higher staff, right? And a lot of those cabinet memos come to this table and die a death because we have a situation, we have a kind of structure now where these things don't even get to cabinet if they don't get Ministry of Finance approval. We can continue to operate a lot of departments, a lot of functions of government, and save money at the same time. The cut in the budget of healthcare was a unique situation because what we had there was that the Bermuda Hospitals Board, through their operations, had accumulated quite a bit of cash. Matter of fact, sitting on $100 million in cash.
I wanted to ask you about that.
And at least half of that they really didn't need. So we were able to take $25 million of that to use to cut the deficit this year.
That's one side. But on the other side, you say you can still do the services by spending less. You admit there are people, especially seniors, who are continuing to have hardships. If perhaps I was sitting there, do you think you'd get a different question, that their perception is completely different to yours?
Well, everybody looks at the world through the lens of their own experience. I know that. My job is to balance the needs of the community with our responsibility to not only our bondholders, but to the people of Bermuda, so that the government can be sustainable. And we have to balance those two things. They have been out of balance for a long time. And I know that we have met our responsibilities to seniors. We increased their pension payouts last year. After we got the report from the actuary there. And so, I think we're fulfilling our responsibilities. There is a notion in the public domain and in political circles that effectiveness is measured by how much money you spend. This just can't be so, right? When you think about it in terms of your own life, there's lots of times you can do things really effectively with hardly any money. So the amount of money you spend on something isn't necessarily directly proportional to your effectiveness. And the reason that we have, I think we have been able to cut down the size of the civil service in this government. We've cut down the size of civil service by 649 people. You haven't laid off one person in the process, and the government's still operating. If I were to sit here and tell you that we've cut all the fat that we can from the government, I'd be a liar, because it's just not so. So we've got to find ways to make the government leaner, even now, and still be effective. Any person who runs a business knows that you can do that. But, you know, we still got, you know, you got criticism from the left, you got criticism from the right. I got criticism from the business sector that we haven't cut government enough. But I can tell you something. When I rolled it at 649 people, they had to stop and pause because very few organizations in this country have cut their staff by that much.
Well, as a percentage, there might be others who are bigger. But, yeah.
But you know, you can't percentage a person, okay? We're talking about 649 persons, okay? We have been able to, I think we've been very successful at reducing the cost of government. I wouldn't say that we're as lean as we can get. We can still do better. But it's really easy to just sort of discount the progress we've made in terms of cutting the size and the expense of the civil service. I think we've done pretty well. But I want to dispel the notion that somehow you think you can balance the budget of this government by just cutting costs. You can't do it.
Well, you can't. I mean, clearly, and part of that was a tax reform, which I want to come on to as well. But you touched on the Bermuda Hospitals Board and these $100 million that they were sitting on. And I haven't seen an explanation yet, so I'm taking this on face value. But I'm assuming that they've been kind of prudent about the way they manage their finances. I'm assuming that they've done that because they think they might need it. But you've come along and taken $50 million from them.
Oh, if they have it, what makes you think they need it? Just because they have it?
Well, presumably, like any good organization, they need the reserves.
It was clear that they didn't need that money, right? And
how was it made clear?
And I can tell you very, very, very plainly that they put out to be invested $50 million in Bermuda government bonds. When we had that bond issue, the Bermuda Hospitals Board put in an order to buy $50 million of Bermuda government bonds. That told me that they didn't need that money, okay?
Isn't that them being prudent and investing for the future?
Not if the government's borrowing money and giving them a subsidy every year, no. No. What sense does that make, all right? It makes no sense. We provide them with a subsidy every year, with a grant every year, a subsidy and a grant. The subsidy is a matter of law, and the grant is a matter of policy. We provide them with a grant every year for their operations, right? And this year we said, because we know that you have got quite a bit of money on hand, that grant is going to be reduced because we know that you've got money that you don't need for your operations.
On the tax reform, we only have touched on this. You talked about increasing the burden on large businesses, but KPMG did come out and say increasing the cost of doing business in Bermuda may result in business moving their staff to lower cost jurisdictions. You know, I think you prefaced the whole budget by saying this is in the context of quite a big shake-up in the world order at the moment. Mm. Isn't there a significant risk? I'm not going to use the word gamble because you criticised me for that last
time.
That's
right, I remember doing that.
Took me to task. Fair enough. Isn't there a significant risk there? And we have touched on this before, and you're talking about risk. I want to go into a bit more detail there because these companies are very cost-conscious.
Yes. In the on the section of the budget speech that deals with the debt, I quoted the very famous Serenity Prayer, and I thought that was just really crystallized the situation the government is in. You know, there are things that we can control, there are things that are out of our control, and we have taken a decision to address the things that we can control. We cannot control what Mr. Trump is going to do, what the United States Congress is going to do about Bermuda, about reinsurance, or anything that might affect us. We cannot control what the European Union is going to do about Bermuda insofar as blacklists are concerned. We can't control what effect Brexit might have in Bermuda. We can't control those things. Even though they are risks, we can't control them. We may be able to have some effect on them in the margin, but we cannot control them. Those are decisions that are made by other people and entities much more powerful than we are. But we can control our own spending. We can control our budget deficit. Sure. So we're concentrating on the things that we can control.
Absolutely. But by concentrating on that, you're creating a framework that might put other things at risk.
No, we're creating a framework that puts Bermuda on a path to sustainability. Right?
But that's as you admitted at the very beginning, there was a risk involved. And as KPMG said, that you know it may result in business improving their stock.
I guarantee you that when you and Dennis came across that street to come in here, you took a risk of being knocked down. You can't do anything without risks in this world.
I had control over crossing that street because I could look either way and make my own decisions.
Exactly.
These businesses can't alter your decisions.
The businesses that there are a lot of businesses that depend on us to be the quality jurisdiction that they say to the world that they're part of. You know, we hold ourselves up as you know the gold standard of offshore financial centers, right? But we cannot be a gold standard of offshore financial centers if the government gets downgraded to junk, right? If that happens, then our banks will be at risk. We can't be a gold standard if that happens. We can't be a gold standard if the country is lawless. We can't be a gold standard if we have a healthcare system that's not effective. So we have to control the things that we can control. And those things that we can control have a direct impact on the quality of life and the quality of business that comes and stays here.
And the amount of business.
You know, Bermuda is a high-cost jurisdiction. I think, quite frankly, that Bermuda doesn't have to be as high-cost as it is for some entities. Some business entities spend a lot of money needlessly in Bermuda and then come to me and tell me how expensive Bermuda is. But they have made choices in their benefits that they give staff and those sort of that have got nothing to do with the government that have made their business model expensive. Well, that's not our fault. At bottom line here is that yes, there are many risks out there, and Bermuda is in a competitive environment. But you know what? Some of our competition, when you look at the condition, the financial condition of some of our competition, then you will see where the risk really is, my friend. The risk isn't cost of business. The risk is in the government because the Bermuda government is much more in debt than Cayman, than Singapore, all of the other ones that you can mention, even Turks and Caicos and BVI. They don't have the kind of debt that we have. They are not exposed like we are. They're not.
Mm.
So this is a problem we have to fix. Understood. And we have to fix it now.
I'm going to quote KPMG again in a minute, but before then, there were obviously rollbacks of some tourist-related concessions.
Yes.
And there was a general rise in customs duties. And again, KPMG said most businesses will have no choice but to pass on a portion of these costs to their customers, something that the Chamber of Commerce also agreed with, and they said it was a chance they'd have to reduce the size of their workforce. Are you going to find that perhaps some of the rollbacks or the payroll tax benefits are going to be overtaken by a rise in doing business, in a rise in consumer goods and services?
Well, first of all,
the
inflation rate that we have in Bermuda is at historically low levels.
It's very low, yeah.
Okay, so I think that's an important point to note. Some people have tried to make the equivalence, and I think it's a false equivalence, the equivalence between benefits we're getting, people are getting from payroll taxes versus the rise in the cost of some things. I don't think they are equivalent. But in any case, we have to find ways of raising revenue for this government within the context of the types of taxes that we have and the context of the types of taxes that we've already announced that we are going to levy.
Mm.
You know, we said we're going to levy a general a service tax, a tax on services. That wasn't accomplished this calendar year or last calendar year. We're going to do it. We're going to start doing it now in earnest. And that will have an impact on certain people using those services. The bottom line with respect to taxes is this. There are many kinds of taxes that any government in anywhere on planet Earth can charge. There is only one kind of tax that I know of that doesn't increase the price of a service or product that are provided to the public, and that's income tax. Income tax is not inflationary because you get it off the bottom line. If the people charge more money, then the tax goes up. So there's no advantage to the company to say, well, I'm going to pass on an increase in income tax because the government just gets more money. So it's a deflationary tax, right? All other taxes are inflationary. So this is not a news bulletin that, you know, if we charge more money, things will cost more on the margin. They will.
So is all this though, all together, is this a risk that you're worth, but you're obviously worth, taking?
Yeah, we have determined that there are many risks.
Because it's a tightrope.
We have determined there are many risks. The same thing has been done by the fiscal responsibility panel. We've come up independently with the same answer, that the biggest risk to Bermuda is the debt. So we need to do what it takes to get that under control. You know, we're not looking to increase revenues to the extent where there will be some huge amount of money going into paying off this debt. But at the very least, we have to get ourselves in a situation where we don't incur any more of it. And that's the key thing. Our operations have to be self-sustaining. And we can do that two ways. We can increase the amount of money we take in to pay for those operations, or we can reduce the cost of those operations, or both. And we're doing both.
I want to jump ahead a little bit about this. Obviously, you're spreading the tax base, increase more revenue. But the Chamber made a point, and it says, one issue that was not addressed in this budget, and which is critical to Chamber members, is the need for a national discussion on how to create more jobs in Bermuda, and the need to adopt laws that make it more attractive to start and bring business on the island. Now, we mentioned, you know, revenue, and you want to have broaden the tax base to increase revenue, but another way of getting revenue is more jobs.
Sure.
They're making the point that that wasn't addressed in the budget at all.
I think they're wrong.
Why?
Well, we just finished spending an epic battle to get a new airport terminal built. That's going to create hundreds of jobs.
That's not in the budget. Is it in the budget?
It is in the budget.
Okay.
Right?
I guess, because, I'll rephrase that then. They're looking for a legislative framework in the
budget.
Well,
you cannot legislate jobs to be created out of thin air, right? We have had major initiatives to create jobs. And we have done legislative things to create jobs as well. You know, we're still working on... We have had incentives to bring in foreign direct investment for hotels. We're certainly re-engineering that so that we can have a legislative package that is more effective. The one that we have now has been somewhat effective. But foreign direct investment, whether it's an airport, whether it's a hotel, whether it's infrastructure for, you know, a new causeway or LNG, all of these things will create jobs. You're not going to just pass a law to create jobs, right? So
they're not saying that.
To say that we haven't addressed it is not correct.
Why? I mean, I guess it's a question for the Chamber, but I'd like your opinion on why do you think they have that perception?
I'm not sure why they have that perception. You know, government is just like this great big target. You know, you can throw darts at it and it doesn't move. So it's not a moving target, so you can always hit it, right? You know, we also got a criticism that we weren't cutting the cost of government, which clearly it was not true as well. I got that criticism. I heard that criticism. It's not true. So the fact to say that, you know, we haven't addressed the creation of new jobs is not true, because we have gone the extra mile, and we've been relatively successful at it. We've gotten foreign direct investment into our hotel sector. We have certainly put a whole new momentum behind the attractiveness of Bermuda as a destination for tourists, right? All of that is growth-orientated. You know, we have this thing, you know, it's almost become a cliche now, the two-track strategy. You know, one is growth, the other is debt reduction. So we've been doing both. So that criticism is not...
Has the growth been too slow?
Not has been as fast as I would have liked, right? Just like the debt reduction isn't as fast as I would have liked, or the deficit reduction isn't as fast as
I
would
have liked. So if it's not as fast as you like the growth, how can you speed it up?
Huh?
How can you speed it up?
I don't know that we can.
That's a strange answer. Why not?
No, well, it's been difficult. The first thing you have to do, and, you know, I don't want to dwell on this too much, but, you know, when something is in free fall, the first thing you got to do is stop it from falling. And it takes a whole lot of effort to do that. We've done that, and it's now rising again. So we spent the first two-thirds of our administration stopping the thing from falling.
But you said he had a twin-track strategy, growth.
Yeah.
And debt.
Yeah.
So they're working side-by-side from the very
beginning. And, you know, we are now experiencing some growth.
But it's not getting as fast.
Growing as fast as I would like. Heck no. No, it's not. So we still have something to strive for. But we have got the thing growing instead of shrinking. It'd be different if we came in and it just was at zero. You know, the car was standing still, and we had to get it to run to 60 miles an hour. And you say, well, you've only got it to 35 miles an hour. You failed. No, when we got in this car, it was going to reverse 50 miles an hour. So it took a huge effort to get it to zero, and we've actually got it moving forward again. So the success of our efforts has to be measured on that yardstick.
The BPSU said, just going back to tax, the BPSU said there's room to broaden the tax base through, they said, wealth taxes. They said to target the rich, many of whom receive income outside of salaries, which is true, they're kind of in dividends. Are there any plans? Would you consider doing something like that?
We have said, I've said many times, including last week, Friday, in the debate, on the general debate on the budget, there is a line of demarcation between taxes, payroll taxes, and income taxes. And that line of demarcation is taxes on passive income. One of the recommendations from the opposition was to tax passive income, rents. And I said that that really crosses the line. And we don't intend to do that. We put that as out of court, income tax out of court. So there are many Bermudians who earn passive income. And we're not talking about just wealthy people either. We're talking about a lot of middle-class Bermudians earn passive income on rents, residential rents. Some of them use it to pay off the mortgage. Some of them use it as a pension. It's a very popular way of having income, of passive income in Bermuda, much more popular than in most large countries. I mean, real estate has been a favorite investment vehicle in Bermuda for generations. So that passive income is something that we are not touching in our strategies
dividends
for taxes.
That includes dividends and bonuses?
That includes bonuses are already taxable.
Oh, okay. Right.
Bonuses are already taxable.
The dividends, so.
Dividends are not taxable. It basically, that would constitute income tax.
So there's no plans to do that?
Nope.
So you don't see a plan through wealth taxes at all?
Well, we already have wealth taxes in a way. We have land taxes. Land taxes are wealth taxes. We have land taxes, we have stamp duties on estates. Those are all wealth taxes.
Yeah, wealth taxes.
Okay. Yeah. We're not We have taxes in Bermuda. We have lots of them.
I know that. I pay them. You expect, I think, to get the general services tax in the next financial year.
Yeah.
Can we see any other tax initiatives, tax reforms
you're looking at? I don't have any in mind at the moment. I think the general service tax is going to be a very interesting exercise for us. But you know, I don't want to bite off more than we can chew. I do believe, though, that we should be able to get the revenue we need to balance the budget, which is what the objective. You know, we're not looking to tax Bermuda into oblivion. That would be foolish. We're just trying to get enough revenue in this government to pay for the government and to pay for the debt.
Now, you have mentioned this a couple of times at least about the civil service and how some 680 jobs have gone.
649.
Okay, so KPMG does, and I won't read out the long quote this time, but to summarise, it says, but there is more to be done in reforming the public sector.
No doubt about that.
So what is there to be done? Why hasn't it been done?
part of the reform has to do with some of the CH Commission recommendations as it relates to productivity. And, you know, to drag a system that has not been focused on productivity or accountability into the world of accountability that private sector people live with every day is not easy. And what we've chosen to do is to start at the top, which is changing the Public Service Commission regulations, because the way it stands now, the permanent secretaries and the cabinet secretary basically don't have a boss.
Well, this is the ongoing dispute, isn't it, with the regulations that were accidentally published, but...
Well, you know, yet they were accidentally, they were not accidentally published, they were published wrong.
Okay, they haven't been withdrawn.
They weren't accidentally published, they were published
haven't
wrong.
Yet to be withdrawn.
We're working on reissuing the right ones, right? But that is the objective. The objective is you cannot have a structure, which ultimately is in the form of a pyramid. Accountability is like water. It flows from the top down. And if the people at the top are not accountable to somebody, then they're not going to drive that accountability down throughout the pyramid. And so that's something that we really have to implement.
It seems to be taking a long time.
Yes.
I mean, you hit the ground running. You could have hit the ground running with the SAGE Commission. You were elected, came to power over 4 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
You said yes.
We have tried a lot of different things. Some of them have met with tremendous resistance. Some we've been able to tackle. And you know, as I said in this budget speech, we've kind of pressed every button, pulled every lever, tried every angle, because we knew what we needed to do. We didn't know exactly how well each of them would work until we tried it. We knew it was something that could work, but we weren't sure how effective that would be. So when it comes to the recommendations of the SAGE Commission, now I find it to be somewhere between ironic and laughable, where I'm getting now the SAGE Commission report thrown at me from the opposition, who kept me up there at that house to 6 o'clock in the morning trying to block it. Now all of a sudden it's become convenient to them. But we value the recommendations of the SAGE Commission. But the most important part of that you cannot get anything done in the public sector in terms of increasing accountability until you have the senior most people accountable to somebody. You know, every person has a boss. Even bosses have bosses. And, you know, the CEO's boss is the board, and the board's boss are the shareholders. You know, and a man's boss is his wife. So, you know, we all have bosses. but not senior civil servants. So regardless of that, though,
I mean, you come on, and the Chamber says members would find their sacrifice more palatable if government were seen to be have done more to share this sacrifice by reducing the cost of the civil service. You admit it's taking a long time. You know, to use the words like palatable, that means distasteful almost. You know, and the Chamber, obviously, speaking on behalf of its members, are getting fed up.
I do not agree with that assessment. And I can tell you something. On the morning of the budget breakfast, when I trotted out the 649 people, they were shocked. I could see people going, oh, I didn't know that. So there's sort of like an assumption that we're not doing anything. Because it's been invisible, right? We have not laid off anybody. There haven't been any protests that we've laid off people. We haven't done that. And the other thing that's really important that I want to mention here is it relates to this. That and I don't know what the number is, but I can tell you there are many, many people of that 649 who have just quit their jobs in government and gone to work for that same private sector that's criticizing us. They have hired people away from us, right? Which, as far as I'm concerned, is great because it means that they need those resources, right? It's a sign of growth when the private sector is hiring away from people away from government. So, but you can't have it both ways. You can't hire my staff away from me and then complain that I'm not cutting the civil service enough, because we've already said almost from the get-go that we're going to cut the civil service by attrition, by early retirements, by regular retirements, and also by very stringent controls on new hiring. The system continues to generate demand for new staff. And as I said before, a lot of those demands from new staff find their graveyard right here at this table, because, you know, it's just like folks are programmed to, you know, somebody leaves. Again, the turnover in government is really large, right? And that's the opportunity for us to, every time they want to replace somebody, it's the opportunity for us to say, now look, do we really need to replace this person, right? And we say in the Ministry of Finance, we say, prove to us that you really have to have this person. And that's the mechanism that we're using to cut down the size without huge disruptions in Bermuda.
What's your philosophy? Do you believe in small government? When I say small, I mean with not that much to do with the private sector, and literally in terms of small, or would you rather have a big government?
I don't think that that's a question that is of any import. It's, you know, it's a philosophical question they love to have in the U.S., perhaps less so in the U.K.
No, I think they have that in the U.K. as well.
Yeah, but, you know, everybody, the U.K.'s got a big government, and even a small government in Britain is a big government someplace else. And that's really the point. We are a dot out here in the middle of the Atlantic. We need to do certain basic things as a government, because there is nobody else who's going to do it for us. You know, in a large country, you will have, you know, so-called government workers, but you've got so many different layers of government, you know, state, federal, municipal, county, all that sort of stuff. We don't have one government here, okay? And there are things that need to be done that the private sector cannot do. I do not believe, for instance, the private sector can run our only hospital. I don't think the private sector can do that. The private sector can't run the police. The private sector are never going to run the financial safety net. Those four things. The private sector cannot do those things. So we have to have the government to do those things. And in Bermuda, the government is also involved in trying to either help business come into Bermuda or sustain businesses that are here. That's become part of the Bermuda model. So, you know, it's now the Bermuda Tourism Authority or Bermuda Business Development Agency. Those are sort of quasi-government entities that we have that are in part of the broader public sector, that are part of government that we have accepted to be part of the public sector. So I really don't engage in these philosophical discussions. I take a much more pragmatic approach. What is it that we need to do? I think there are things that perhaps can be done by the private sector that are done by the government now. But as we stand here now, we can let this balloon, which has been inflated considerably by the former government in particular, let's deflate this thing slowly and in an orderly fashion so that it becomes affordable.
Changing tack, excuse the pun. I just wanted to talk about the America's Cup.
No, why not?
It's probably the sailing term, I know. So I had to use
That's cool.
How much does it cost government so far, do you know?
Well, overall, it's going to cost us 70-odd million.
And how much of that do you expect to get back?
We're expecting to get between 250, as a country, we're expecting to get 250, 300 million.
So where does that figure come from, is that of interest?
The ACBDA and ACEA people promulgated those numbers.
That's the overall income wealth that's going to be generated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So is there going to be a tax windfall for you?
I don't know. We're expecting certainly something positive.
Because I was just thinking about it, and the signs are there's going to be increased employment, whether it be part-time, increased hotel beds, increased air arrivals, increased imports.
Yep.
All these are taxed.
All that. Yeah.
So you're going to get a windfall?
It should be a good year, yeah.
Have you set about looking to see how much you might get on as extra revenue?
No, I haven't. I haven't worked it out, and I don't know if any of my people have worked it out. But we do think that it will be certainly help to bolster our income levels for this year.
The reason I asked is I wondered if you've got any, if there were any, if you would consider, I suppose now, any plans for that extra money. Is that going to go to wipe off the debt?
If there's any extra money, it's just going to reduce the deficit.
That's simply it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't, the way this government works, there's never any extra money.
Well, this is a windfall, though. This is something that you didn't budget for.
Yeah, I mean, if revenues are stronger than we expect, it'll just go to reduce the deficit more. That's all. Yeah. Nothing dramatic.
We touched on a few things, but is anything we can expect finance-wise in the pipeline? Any good news?
I don't think so. I think we've been pretty
no good news.
Forthright. There's no extra good news. I mean, the good news that we have, that we've given all the good news. People don't expect good news to come from finance anyway. They never expect good news from ministers of finance. But we're expecting to have a pretty good year in terms of the economy because of America's Cup. And I think some of the success of things going on in not only the Bermuda Tourism Authority, but also Bermuda Business Development Agency. Overall, business confidence, I think, is going to be strong this year. That's much stronger this year than it was last year. As you rightfully said, the government will participate in that so long as we don't blow our wad, so to speak, in terms of expenses. Because there's this great, great, insatiable tendency to want to spend money, and the nature of this job in finance is to make sure that doesn't happen, because the things will just sort of spin out of control, and I think we will see when the Commission of Inquiry comes out what out of control means. Right, this thing can get out of control real easy.
Okay, on that note, Minister, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in to Burr News Current Affairs Podcast with Jeremy Deacon. Listen at your leisure on www.burrnews.com, your 24/7 Bermuda news source.